Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Pop Culture Stars. It's Dr. John Stamey. Hope everybody's doing well tonight. It's going to be a real exciting time because we got a filmmaker on here, and he's a really good one. I want to first of all say hello to my panelists. First of all, Dave Atwell. How you doing tonight, buddy?
A little under weather. Sporting a kidney infection. First time I've ever had one, so breaking new ground. Went to the doc. Doc said I'm in good shape. Gave me some meds. And it's funny how what fixes you makes you feel like shit. Well, that's where I'm at. But otherwise,
well, you just keep on trying to feel good and stay in with us, okay?
Absolutely.
Todd, how are you doing tonight up there in Indianapolis? Is it as cold up there as it is down here?
That is so cute that you think it's cold down there. The look, I am outstanding, the supernatural, and ecstatic to be here. Mother Nature's making a go of it here at the end of February. But I do want people to remember one thing. 30 days from now, well, no, actually 29 days from now, because it is a shorter month. We are 1 month away. We are 1 month away from stinking spring. And, man, I am ready for it, people. Man, I'm ready
I think we all are. Well, glad to have you here. And we have a great guest here tonight. It is Stephen Bastian. Did I get your last name correct, Stephen?
You did, sir.
Great, great. Well, we are glad to have you here. You and I have a mutual friend, filmmaker Mike Roberts from Wilmington. What a great guy. And
yes, Mike is fantastic.
And we just kind of like started talking because I saw that we had a lot of mutual friends, and sometimes I can find someone that might be a lot of fun to be on Pop Culture Stars. And so that's what we found, what I found out. Now, the reason you're on here is because you have got a fan film. It's a Star Wars fan film. And tell us a little bit, first of all, tell us about you as a filmmaker and how'd you get in this crazy business. Then we want to talk about your film, and I've got a link up there. I hope it works. Facebook's been having problems. The whole internet's been having problems today. But, tell us a little bit about how you got started in the film business.
Well, years and years ago, and I still do it to this day, I started out doing weddings. I was a wedding videographer, as a matter of fact. And I did some pretty interesting videos. People loved my work. And one of my colleagues, who was a photographer by the name of Bill, he said, you know, you're really good at making wedding videos. Why don't you make films? And I was like, I don't know anything about that. So I did my homework and I checked out a few things. I had a few scripts that I'd written, you know, and I'd showed them to him. And he was like, you should turn this into a film. And the rest is history. I just started doing my homework. And next thing you know, I got a great crew and cast, and I started putting out feelers for people to be in my films, and I got a bunch of people that were like, yeah, I'll do it for free, I just want to be in your films. And I'm like, okay, absolutely. And I remember looking at my girlfriend at the time, and I was like, is this really happening? And she was like, it's really happening. And it all just kind of serendipitously came together.
I know exactly what you mean. It's just hard to believe that sometimes great things just seem to land on your head, don't they?
Oh, yeah. And the overwhelming thing is basically the fundraising aspect of it. I never knew how complicated and how hard that actually is. Getting people to donate money to independents is rather difficult at times.
And imagine it's hard enough to be able to pay for a Comic-Con or a Bigfoot festival like I run. You have to just take that one out of the bank. But yeah, it's interesting. And I have seen Mike Roberts go through Vaughn, the series, and trying to raise money and get his stars and everything. Had some really great stars. Had Ryan Williams, and of course Vaughn was there from One Tree Hill, and it was all good.
He had Amy Cody and a few others, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was just trying to pick a couple that I could remember. But yeah, and I know, and it went on Netflix, and people liked it, and all that good stuff. So, you know, we were fortunate to see Mike go through all that and help cheer him on, because I sure enjoyed the series myself. So in other words, basically it just happened. You just had some talent in being a film, a little bit of a film guy, and then you just started putting it together. And so that's really now. Where are you located, by the way? You're up in Eastern
North Carolina.
Yeah. All right. Are you close to Wilmington or kind of far away?
Yes, I'm about 2 hours from Wilmington, about an hour from Raleigh. I'm in a town called Greenville.
Yeah, he was a pretty darn good drummer too. But anyway, well, I'm very glad that we were able to have you on the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the fan film business, because I don't know much about it, and then tell us about the film itself.
Okay. Fan films are very tricky. There are a lot of rules, especially when you're dealing with a powerhouse like Disney. You've got to follow their rules to the letter, and they are very specific on what you can and cannot do, and we are following every one of those rules, of course. You know, you're not allowed to make money on it, so anything we invest in it, I've invested a small fortune myself, we're not going to get that back. But you know, we're doing it for the love of film. We're doing it for the love of Star Wars. And I've written a fantastic story that I really think needs to be told, that has never been told in any of the fan films or any of the canon films or even the non-canon stuff. And that all came about one day. It was funny. It was about 5 years ago. I took my daughter to see episode 7, and she fell in love with Rey. She thought Rey was so cool. And one day I was sitting around in the living room, and we were watching some of the older Star Wars, which she hadn't seen, because she was only about, you know, 7 or 8 years old at the time. And
okay.
She was like, Daddy, I would love to play Rey in a movie, because she's done some acting herself. I've had her in films and she could walk. And I was like, well, sweetheart, we can't do a film about Rey. I mean, that's, you know, that they're doing a canon film about that. And I tried to explain that to her. But I said, we could do a different film. And she was like, what? And I told her about Mara Jade. And Mara Jade, if for people that don't know, is a non-canon character. She was in several novels. She's very well-loved by the people that follow her story. And basically her story is that she became the Emperor's hand, you know, during the original trilogy. She was always behind the scenes. You never saw her in the films. You never saw her in any of it because she's a non-canon character. She was written in novels after the fact. But the way it was written was that she was the Emperor's hand. She was his chief assassin. And later on, after the Emperor, you know, was disposed of in episode, you know, spoiler alert, in Return of the Jedi, when he was disposed of, she became a smuggler, and she eventually, long story short, married Luke Skywalker and became Mara Jade Skywalker. And she turned from the dark side to the light side. He turned her to the light side, and she became a Jedi Master and, you know, started training the new Jedi in the non-canon books, of course. The story I've written is her backstory. The only mention of her origin is in one book where it says that she was taken from the Emperor as a small child, as a young girl, from her parents. And I thought, well, we need more than that. So I had my, you know, 8-year-old daughter at the time, and I'm like, okay, let's write her backstory. So I wrote her backstory, and I write the story about her parents. I play her father, Othar Jade. Emily Gomez plays her mother, Petra Jade. And I've written this fascinating story that kind of tells her origin, how she became the Mara Jade, how she became the Empress, and how she fell to the dark side, how she was corrupted. And it's I don't want to give away spoilers, but I think it's a really cool story, and people are going to love it. It's very, very touching. And the film is dedicated to childhood cancer research awareness. We're trying to bring awareness to childhood cancer research. Well, you ask yourself, well, how are you going to do that in a Star Wars film? I actually wrote in a scene where Mara had a younger brother that, and this is a spoiler, but they're living on a pirate planet. They've escaped from the Emperor and his in the Empire and stuff like that. And he has brain cancer and he dies of brain cancer. And, my character Othar, her father, and her mother blame themselves that had we been on Coruscant, had we not left the Jedi Order, we should have known this was going to happen. We could have stopped it. And because they're blaming themselves and they're having this argument right in front of their daughter, she blames them. And that's her first fall to the dark side, is her anger towards them for the loss of her brother.
Wow.
I liked it.
Yeah, man.
Absolutely. Now, Stephen, we are fortunate to have with us an author who does his fair share of writing. Don't you, Dave?
I'm a big fan of Dave. Dave Atwell, I am a huge fan, brother. I love your work.
Hey, I appreciate it very much. Trying to get the work back in motion. You know how it is when you get into the publishing game. Things get a little cruddy. And trying to wiggle my way through that. And then we should be back in action. But, yeah, that's good stuff. Anything Star Wars, of course, it's just the biggest thing is the handcuffs of creativity when it comes down, like you said, to dealing with Disney. Some of the best ideas cannot be employed. So hats off to you for being able to creatively negotiate their minefield, if you will.
Oh, yes. Well, the biggest challenge we have is trying to create, I don't know if you guys have seen my trailer, but trying to create the Star Wars universe, number one, in Eastern North Carolina, because everything here looks like Eastern North Carolina, and to make it look like an alien planet is a challenge on its own. Without using so much green screen. Without using so much green screen that it just looks cheesy. The other problem is that we've had a hard time raising money because we are unknown. Nobody knows about us. And doing this with no budget has been really, really challenging, because we have to make props, and we have, like, we're doing our spaceship battle scenes old school. We don't have the money to buy the digital spaceships because they're expensive, and we don't have the CGI people that are qualified to do the CGI and not make it look like really, really bad. So I decided, exactly. So what I'm doing is I'm using blue screen like they did in the old days. I'm using a camera on a stable gimbal, and I've got models that I bought on Amazon of the actual spaceships, and I'm shooting the scenes in real time, choreographing the fight and following a ship between two other starships, and then we're going to superimpose that on the planet Ryloth. And I've already seen what my editor, Anthony Johnson, has done. It's absolutely amazing, and it's going to work. It's going to look really good because we're using actual ship models. It's not going to be CGI. So we're doing it really old school. The only difference between the way we're doing it and the way they did it in 1977 is we're doing it on video digitally instead of using film.
But
at 24 frames a second, it looks like film.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, I was going to say, sometimes the organic stuff is the best way to go. I mean, one of my complaints about Lucas's last three, the prequels, as they're known as, just too much CGI. You know what I mean?
It looked fake.
Yeah, it didn't feel
exactly real,
if you will.
Exactly. The biggest compliment I got was from another Star Wars fan who watched my trailer. In my trailer, you'll see a scene where we're running through the woods and we're shooting blasters. And he made a comment and he said, that looks like something out of Return of the Jedi. I never expected to get that kind of quality. I thought maybe I'd get episode 1 or episode 2, because I'm an independent filmmaker on no budget. I never thought I would get somebody saying, wow, that looks like something out of Return of the Jedi. I was like, holy crap. You know, okay, I'll take that. Thank you.
Well, you see, I'm going to have it a little bit easier when I do my Lizard Man film, because all I got to do is have a green wet dude.
We've got snake people. We created new characters. They're bartenders, and they're going to be hysterical. They're played by Katie Lyman and her daughter Sabrina, and the characters are Satina, and it's an incredible thing. We're actually, you know, we're not going to use masks and stuff like that. We're hand painting and airbrushing the scales onto her skin. And our makeup artist is just incredible. It's going to look so good. I'm blown away by the quality of people that we were able to pull together. Our costume designer, Beverly Horvath, she has handmade every one of our costumes with a sewing machine. We're not buying costumes. We're not using aftermarket costumes or things we find online. She's hand making our costumes. So it's, and she weathers them to make them look worn. Which, you know, because when you buy a costume off of Amazon or something like that, or eBay, they're shiny and new, and, you know, it just doesn't look right. These look like they've been worn for years, because she's getting the fabric from thrift stores. She's going to thrift stores, and she'll find a cloak or a shirt, and then she'll adjust it and alter it and change it and make it look, and it's already been worn and washed like 20 times, so it actually has that worn-in look, and I'm like, wow, oh, my God. We're making a Star Wars film. I sometimes I have to pinch myself and be like, how am I doing this?
Yeah, it's funny how you mentioned that about the costumes looking worn. I don't know if you guys have had the time to watch the Netflix series Frontier.
Oh, yeah.
With Jason Momoa. God, it's phenomenal.
Absolutely.
Nevertheless,
great.
I told my son as we're watching it, I says, I'll be damned. I says, they finally, a colonial era show that gets the uniforms right. And, you know, every time you see something from the colonial era, you got these guys in these, you know, beautiful, bright red, you know, jackets and the wool, you know, slacks that are, you know, bright white and the hats that are all, every one of those soldiers on that series looks like he just climbed out of the ditch somewhere. And that is a whole heck of a lot more realistic for being, you know, pre-revolution. And it just adds a whole lot of authenticity to the series just by the way the redcoats are dressed. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Totally agree with you. Well done.
We also have a story. And I, not to toot my own horn, I wrote it, and I do consider myself a figure writer. I have written a novel. I wrote a novel called The Third Horse. It's two books. It's on Amazon now. It's a romance, action-adventure romance. You know, so I have been dabbling in a little bit of writing and novels as well as screenplays. And one of the problems I had with other fan films, and I'm not knocking anybody's work. Believe me, there are some amazing fan films out there. But a lot of them are either great special effects, and the acting ability is eh, and the writing is eh, and the dialogue is eh, or the dialogue and the acting is great, but the special effects look really canned and cheesy. We're trying to go for the best of both worlds, and we're not doing a short. A lot of fan films are 10 minutes long, like the Kenobi one that just came out, which is absolutely incredible. If you haven't seen it, I seriously recommend it. Fantastic film, but it's only about 12 minutes long. You know, what we're doing, we were going to do a two-hour film, and we realized that that was biting off way more than we can chew. So what we've done is we serialized it in a way where we're doing it in a shorter film. The first film is actually going to be called Mara, and it's going to be about an hour long. The second film we're going to do is going to be another shorter film. It's going to be about 45 minutes long, and it's going to highlight more adventures of the other characters that were originally involved in the original script. So you'll eventually get to see the entire film, the entire two-hour film, but it's going to be in parts rather than as one long film.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, yeah, Netflix is making a ton of money doing it.
So, and I'm also doing other films in the meantime as we get Star Wars shot, I'm trying to raise money. And, you know, the only way I'm going to be able to do that is to get more work out there. So I'm doing a short film called Someone to Talk To. And then there's a sequel immediately after that called Someone to Talk To, T-O-O. It's a really cool story. I can't tell you anything about it because it would be a total spoiler to give you anything about it. But it's a really cool story about, well, basically about a guy that his girlfriend breaks up with him, and he just wishes he had someone to talk to, so he talks to himself. And I'll basically leave it at that, and it gets very interesting on how I pull that off. I'm also doing a trilogy of feature films that are romantic comedies. The first, it's the Any Other Day trilogy, and the first film is Deep End of the Pool, and it's about a father and daughter, and the daughter wants him to find somebody new because her mom died, and she's ready for him to start dating again, but he's not quite ready, and goes into that whole thing, and it's a romantic comedy. And then there's The Nice Guy Syndrome, which is the second film, and the third film is called As Luck Would Have It, and they're three feature films, and we're all shooting those in concert. Basically, when we're rained out on Star Wars and we can't shoot outside, we regroup and shoot a scene from Deep End of the Pool. You know, we don't want to waste a day.
That's right.
Sorry, I'm babbling.
No, you're doing fine. Nice. You just, it's been a moment since you actually stopped to breathe. You got a lot going on, dude. Sometimes when people are working that many kind of projects and that going on, I wonder how people compartmentalize it. And I know what I do with multiple projects at work, completely different story, but I know I have to compartmentalize, and if I don't, I'm through.
Oh yeah. And that's exactly what I do, is I compartmentalize and I prioritize. And, you know, I basically tell my cast and crew, because a lot of my members from Star Wars that I'm working with, this cast and crew, are working on Deep End of the Pool. So, you know, it was funny. One of my actors, Laron Rose, he goes, there's no way we're going to be able to memorize our parts for the scene this weekend for Deep End of the Pool. You know, how are we going to do that? And I was like, don't worry, I'll feed you the line scene by scene if I have to. You know, and then we'll get ready to set up a scene. And while we're setting up, you know, if you know anything about filmmaking, you got to set up the cameras, you got to set up the lights, and I hand them the script and go, okay, in this scene, you're going to be doing this line, this line, this line, this line, this line on this page. And then they'll run the line several times, and then we'll shoot it several times. And I always give my actors a chance to express themselves. So I'll say, all right, guys, now we shot it, I got it, it looks good. Now I want you to run with it a little bit, ad lib a little bit, stay on point, but give me what you can. And sometimes I get some really good stuff that I end up using that I never wrote. You know, my actors are amazing, and they're able to pull that off.
That's awesome.
And the name of the game at the end of the day is fun. You got to have fun, and we have fun doing it. You know, we have a lot of fun. We're a big, happy family, and we just have a blast.
Yeah, the minute it becomes work, then it feels like work. If you're able to, and that's the thing about writing. It was funny when I was self-publishing. Writing was so much fun, and then I got picked up by a publisher. My feet didn't touch the ground. I was like, hey, I finally arrived, and it has been nothing but mayhem.
Now they expect results from me.
Yeah, I mean, everything from fraud to misrepresentation to everything else, and, you know, it's funny. It took away my happy place. So, I get it. You've got to keep it. That and camaraderie through, the actors and everything. If you've got everybody on the same page, everybody buying into it, man, I tell you what, it's only God knows what you can come up with. It's when you can't get that camaraderie and you can't get people to have that common vision.
The greatest invention to our work ever, and if for any filmmakers out there that are considering making films, especially if your actors and cast and crew and everything are spread out, I use a program called Discord, and it's used primarily by gamers. It's how when they're on a video game, it's how they put on the headsets and they talk to each other while they're in the game, if they're playing Halo or some other game like that. I discovered it because I used to play video games, And we use Discord for our guilds and stuff like that to talk to each other while we're playing the game. And I said, well, I said to my friend AJ, who's one of my producers, I said, why don't we use Discord for the film? So I got everybody into Discord, and now we have weekly meetings where we get on voice chat, and we just all talk about everything, and sometimes we don't always agree. Sometimes the camaraderie does fade. We start arguing, and then I have to pull it all together and say, guys, listen, it's simple. This is what we're going to do. And I got to come up with an idea off the top of my head to make everybody happy. But Discord is a great tool for that, because you can all have a conversation. You can have 50 people in there at one time, and we have weekly meetings. We have, like, you know, state of the project meetings and, you know, stuff like that, and we talk about what we're going to do and our plans for that. You know, and I do actually do one last thing that I'm trying to also hopefully raise money by doing it on YouTube, because I see these kids making boku bucks on YouTube. I started a series called The Relationship Life, where I talk about the many facets of relationships and from the first date to the 50th anniversary. And I do that on YouTube now. And you guys can look for The Relationship Life with Stephen Bastian. And I just sit in front of my computer and I talk about relationships and different topics, from jealousy to the first date to, you know, what do you do when it's over? You know, and I, you know, stuff like that. And it's people are starting to like it. They're starting to dig it, because I just tell the truth. I don't pull any punches. You know, I don't sugarcoat it. I'm not there to teach people, you know, game on how to get laid. You can go to a million other sites for that. I'm teaching people and telling people how to get into a relationship that's solid, and how to talk to each other and how to communicate effectively with each other and make it work. You know, because I am in weddings. That's my primary hat, is I do weddings. So I know, you know, relationships, because I see them every weekend. I know what works and what doesn't.
I don't do funerals and I don't do weddings, so my hat's off to you. Oh man, laughing hurts. I'm sorry.
It's funny because sometimes I do a wedding on a Saturday, and there's some couples that I look at them and I think to myself, oh my God, they're going to celebrate their 50th anniversary. And there's other couples I look at them and I'm like, yeah, they're not going to make it 6 months. The worst one I ever had, though, was I was doing a Catholic wedding in a Catholic church. I was shooting video, and they were all Italians. You know, hey, how you doing? Hey, forget about it. What are you doing? You know, it was all that kind of thing. You know, there were a lot of vowels. Hey, let's put it that way. Hey, oh, hey, you, hey, you know, and there were vowels everywhere. And I shot the bride getting ready, the shoes, the hair, the dresses. I shot the groom getting ready, and the boutonnieres and the ties and everything and the jackets. I got everything shot, and I'm ready for the ceremony, and I've got everything set up. And the groom walks down the aisle with his groomsmen, and he gets to the front of the aisle, and he's looking around, and he sees that the best man is missing. And he's looking around going, where's Donnie? Hey, where's Donnie? You know what I'm talking about? Where's Donnie? And Donnie ain't over here. You know, and all of a sudden he looks around and he's like, I'll be right back. And he walks down the aisle. And then I heard the most atrocious language you could ever possibly hear in a Catholic church. Basically what had happened was, she was in love with the best man and she was marrying him for his money. And she was, they were playing the piano in a coat room somewhere off in the church. And, yeah, it ended up where the bride's father was punching the groom's father. And, you know, I didn't know whether to turn off the camera. I thought I was going to end up in a trunk somewhere. And, you know, I was like, oh, my God, I should not be witnessing this. First thought out of my head was, I'm not getting paid today. Ironically enough, they did pay me. But I was thinking, I'm going to die. I shouldn't be seeing this. I'm a witness to something horrible. And, yeah, they're going to take me out.
Wow.
Seen so many movies. I've seen way too many mafia films, and I'm thinking I'm going to end up in the trunk of a car somewhere, you know.
Yeah, it don't even have to be mafia films when there's money involved, just saying.
I didn't know whether to turn off the camera or not. I'm like, should I shoot this? Finally, I shut it off and put the camera down, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to shoot this.
It turned out to be state seven. We're all over, you know.
It was scary.
Yeah. Oh man! So, if you had to approach a different storyline other than Mara Jade, what do you think you'd want to tackle?
You mean if I wanted to do another Star Wars film?
Absolutely.
Oh, I would love to do something from the Old Republic, from Revan to Bastila Shan. Actually, my character, Petra Shan, is Petra Jade, my wife in the film. I actually allude to that because her maiden name is Shan. She's a direct descendant of the Shan family, so she's a direct descendant of Revan. So
wow.
I kind of hint at that. But I would love to do a backstory on that and do something from the Old Republic and do Revan and all of that, because I think that would just be an incredible story that needs to be told. And to be told, you know, with the ability that we're able to pull it off, you know, and the quality, it's going to look like a Star Wars film.
Yeah, that first Knights of the Old Republic, what made that game so good was the writing and the story behind that. When they came out with, Knights 2, of course, the game just didn't have that same feeling to it. And, the gameplay was a little bit better, of course, because, you can improve on what, you did the first time around. But story-wise, it just didn't have that same feeling. And, that Revan storyline is definitely... You want to talk about some untapped potential?
Oh, it's planned. Believe me, it's planned. I've actually been batting that around for a while, and it's been planned. It's been talked about that we do a Revan film, but there's been a few people that have done other versions of it. But I could come up with a story that would be really, really compelling. This is, like I said, this film, all my films are to bring awareness to childhood cancer research. We're going to do PSAs at the end of every film with the cast and crew, talking about, donate to St. Jude's Children's Hospital and Make-A-Wish Foundation. The film, the Star Wars film Mara, is actually dedicated to a young girl. I don't know if you know the story of Katie Johnson. Are you familiar with her?
No, I'm not.
Okay, Katie Johnson was Alvin Johnson's daughter. She passed away at a young age from brain cancer, and she wanted an R2 unit by her bed, like Padme had in Episode 2, before she died. He went to the R2 Builders Association, and they built him a droid, a little pink droid called R2KT, and they named her after Katie. He had this droid built, and this droid goes all over the world. It was actually in Force Awakens. At a very brief scene, you see R2KT in the background. So she is a canon character now. I was going to mention R2KT in the film as being their droid, but I never thought I could pull it off because I didn't have a droid and we didn't have the budget to build a $10,000 droid. So I was like, we're just going to have to mention the droid. And my VFX editor said, well, if we got someone to donate a regular R2 unit, we could turn her pink, because it's a pink droid, we could turn her pink in post. I could pull that off. It's just a matter of masking. And I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, no problem. I can do it. So I went to the R2 Builders Association, and I told them what I'm doing and that I'm dedicating this film in memory of Katie Johnson and that I want R2KT in the film, but unfortunately I don't have a pink droid. Does anybody have a blue R2 unit that we could turn pink in post and let me use it? And I got a bunch of people saying, yeah, I've got a droid. I'd be glad to help. This one guy said, well, why don't you contact Alvin out of respect? He started the 501st, by the way. He's the founder of the 501st. They said, why don't you contact the Johnson family and make sure that it's okay with them? I realize what you're doing is for a noble cause, but it is their droid. It is their daughter. You probably should reach out to them and get permission before you do it. And I was like, duh, yeah, good idea. Didn't think of that. So I wrote an email to Alvin, and I said, he lives in South Carolina, and I said, I told him what we were doing and what, how excited we are, and we would love to mention KT and maybe have a cameo scenes of KT and use another droid. And he wrote me back and he said, if you're shooting in the North Carolina area, I will bring R2KT to set. And I was
wow.
like, oh my God. So yes, I've got the actual R2KT that was in Force Awakens, and it's going to be Othar and Petra's droid. So we're very excited about that too, that we have
That's
an actual
awesome.
Droid. So, like I told you earlier, everything's just been coming together. It's almost like it's meant to be. It's just been very slow going because we have no budget, and I have to pay for this out of pocket. And, you know, I work and it's hard and I'm not wealthy, but I'm getting there. I'm working on it.
There's so much that goes into doing that stuff. And that's what always cracks me up whenever I see somebody I know says, hey man, when are you going to give me your books? When you pay for the damn things. That's why I'm
exactly.
not what I'm trying to do. Yeah, the stuff. Beyond, you know, trying to make a living off of it. Sure, I don't mind waiving that. But that book just didn't fall out of heaven somewhere and said, here you go, you know, populate the earth with it.
You
gotta pay for that.
Yeah, Mara Jade's lightsaber.
Yeah.
Mara Jade's lightsaber, the one we have to build, is it's like $300, and we have to buy it.
Oh, yeah.
We can't, you know, because it's a very specific design, and you know, so I'm hemorrhaging money, and it gets, you know, and all of that stuff, and it's like, oh, sometimes it's so draining, but it's still worth it. You know, I've got to get it done. I want to get it done, and what I'm hoping for, I keep telling my cast and crew, I tell them in jest, but I keep hoping for that one guy that's the multi-millionaire that's like, you know, I love Star Wars and his entire house is decorated in Star Wars and I love what you're doing with the cancer research. Here's $50,000. And I'll be like, let's make a movie.
Yeah, you know, and you can just go to it and get, you know, and do exactly what you want then, you know. You never can though, you know. Got to keep
the
word
out
there.
We had a guy that's a friend of LaRon's that I don't know his name off the top of my head, but he spent his own money and built a spaceship cockpit in his garage because we have a scene in the spaceship cockpit, and it had to have cost him $1,000 to build this cockpit in his garage for a scene that's only 3 minutes long in the entire film. You know, and I kind of feel bad that he spent all that money and time building it for something that's only going to be in the film for 3 minutes. But I love him for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, there are folks out there that do stuff for the they'll do it pro bono, and with hope that they'll get discovered just the same, you know, being a part of your project, you know. And so I wouldn't be afraid to take.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's not a cover artist out there that's not waiting for the next guy to write a book. You know, when you got folks out there that are willing to throw in and help out, by God, I would say please and thank you.
Oh, yeah, it always helps. It always helps. And we give them perks, of course, you know, like we involve them. I've got people that have donated money to this, and I've made them a producer on the film, of course, and gave them a little bit of input and get them in the loop. And, you know, we've got a VIP group on Facebook where people can pay $10 and they can get access to the VIP group. And they're the only ones that get behind the scenes footage and all that good stuff. And they're able to see things that no one else is able to see. So we're trying to put it together, and I've got a Patreon, you know, that I'm trying to launch, and so far I don't have anybody on it, but, you know, I'd like to get that started fully. The relationship life will take off on YouTube, and I'll get 50,000 subscribers and start getting money and be able to monetize that, and I'll throw all that money towards Star Wars and of course, the other films. Now, my other films, Deep End of the Pool, The Nice Guy Syndrome, all of those films, any money we make from those in sales, you know, I'm going to donate 10% to Make-A-Wish Foundation and St. Jude Children's Hospital, because we're always going to do the cancer research thing. That's a very passionate project for us.
Yeah, that's good stuff, man.
We always try to give back, you know, because it's 2020. There shouldn't be cancer anymore. That should go away. So I'm going to do whatever I can.
Yeah, on so many levels, man. I'm so
fucking many levels. Yeah, that's just, it's hitting extra close to home this week. So, yeah, sorry about the language.
That's okay. But, yeah, so I'm trying to bring as much awareness as I can. And the more, you know, money we make and the more fame we get as far as notoriety, the more awareness we're going to be able to bring to it and get people to donate. And like I said, at the end of every film and the end of the Star Wars film, we're going to have the cast and crew on set in front of a green screen with a starry background. And we're going to be begging people, please donate to St. Jude's. Please donate to Make-A-Wish. You know, together we can end childhood cancer once and for all. It's just going to take money and time and research, and it can be done.
Yeah, I mean, I say it all the time. We got robots cruising around on Mars right now, but we still can't. And I ain't going to get on my soapbox about it, but I still am totally convinced that that we already know how to fix it, but there's no money in the fixing. There's more money in the treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what's good for business might not be good for humanity, but it doesn't matter when you're that guy. And
I've said that many times that they make more money on the treatments than they do the cure, and there may actually be a cure, but you know, it's ridiculous how greedy some people are. But you know, one day things are going to change. The more awareness we bring to it, the more people are going to start, you know, getting up in arms about it and saying, you know, this has to stop. We have to make a change. And hopefully I can do that with my film.
Outstanding. Yeah, we got to get all your information over there to Dr. John's. That way he can post it up.
Yes, I shall. I'll get you my. I've got a fundraiser. I've got a Patreon. We've got, like I said, we've got a trailer out for Star Wars.
Speaking of the trailer, hate to interrupt. John had posted a link to that earlier,
mm-hmm.
and I clicked on it. YouTube had video unavailable.
Don't know. Could be a tech issue, or it could be that big brother you're working with that didn't read, and I'm sure you put in all the little nomenclature that you had to put in to say, hey, I'm authorized to do this. I ain't making a stinking penny on it. Here's my get out of jail free card.
That's got to be a glitch, because I just watched it like 15 minutes ago. It's still there.
Oh, good, because I tried it right off the site. Nothing else is going to say. Send me the damn link. I'll repost it. It's been one of those days with tech issues. That stuff was starting way too early today. And I tell you, last night, Tuesday being Tuesday, that's update, you know, when you can expect all Microsoft updates. And I didn't have anything new pending, so I know it wasn't, you know, my lack of due diligence.
It's weird.
It's pretty sad your Tuesday night is making sure you've got updates.
Yeah, if you go to YouTube and you just type in Star Wars Fate of the Force, it should pop up. You can also look up Motion Sound and Magic Films, and you'll see, if you type in Motion Sound and Magic Films, you will definitely see our main site for that. And it's the trailer is the trailer number two. There's two of them up there, but the second one is the better of the two. Obviously, we've done a lot more of CGI and work on it. But that's how you can find it, is you look up Motion Sound and Magic Films on YouTube, and then once you find that, you can scroll down and you'll find Star Wars Fate of the Force.
Okay.
And it should be there.
That'll work. Yeah, because I'm sitting here on the TV just thumbing through trying to find it myself, because I'm going to do the old watch it on mute, you know, while I'm doing the show, and then go back and listen through to it. But yeah, I'll check it out after the show, because some of the fan fiction stuff out there is pretty darn sharp. And I know Lucas has gotten the whole nine yards, but again, you know, compared to some of the stuff that he put out on the three prequels, you know, you kind of step back and like, George, you know, did we miss a step here, buddy? So, yeah, not to say that these last three films have been over the top either.
Thought they were pretty good, actually. I enjoyed them. I mean, yeah, they were, you know, they're, I think nowadays filmmakers, they throw a little too much into it and they try a little too hard. And with all of the CGI and with all of the special effects, they try to make it more about the special effects than the story. And that's one of the things I'm focusing on. Yeah, that's one of the things I'm focusing on is the story. I mean, I have all of the elements of a Star Wars film. I've got action, I've got lightsabers, but I've also got dialogue, and dialogue has humor. You know, I put a lot of them. I consider myself to be a pretty funny guy. Most people say I have a great sense of humor. So I put in a lot of the Star Wars type humor, you know, that was always in Star Wars. There was always some funny moments, you know, like, you know, how'd you like to find yourself floating home, kid? You know, stuff like that. Huh. I try to put in that kind of humor. You know, I just assume kiss a Wookiee. I can arrange that. I try to put in that level of humor in my film to give it that more Star Wars feel. Because that's the other thing I notice about fan films is, you know, it's all about the lightsabers. It's all about the blasters. You don't see any comedy. There's no fun. There's no funniness in it. They don't put the Star Wars humor in it. And Star Wars was always funny. There were always some funny moments in it. You know, when she said, get this walking carpet out of my way. You know, it's a great line. I love that line.
I mean, if you actually got 20 minutes to spare or you're eating a sandwich at lunch and you don't feel like looking at political ads, go on Disney Plus and look at those Star Wars Lego videos.
Oh, God, yes. They're great. I love them.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, and just what you were just saying, some guy was probably sitting at his desk one day going, you know what, has everything got to be so darn serious? And, you know, there you go. And, yeah, I'm telling you, I think for me, and again, guys, I pardon my slow drawl tonight. I'm struggling, but,
you're doing great.
One of the things that I think Star Wars really needs is okay, we get it. Skywalkers are a pretty jacked up clan. I think that's what made The Mandalorian such a fantastic you know, series. And what Favreau was doing, all those little things that we used to say when we were kids watching it, like, man, I wonder what that sandcrawler looks like up top. Man, you know, what would happen if you took 50 Jawas and put it on, you know, Darth Vader? What would happen? You know, the bounty hunters, you know, they, you know, we had the toys. And that was one of the things about growing up with Star Wars. They'd always drop the toys out there about 2 or 3 months before the film. So you'd be playing with them, and then you'd watch the movies, and you're going, well, crud, the guy didn't have the 2 seconds in the movie. And the first one that comes to mind is Bossk. Man, I used to figure out my Bossk action figure when I was a kid. Thought he was the coolest guy out there. And Empire Strikes Back, he stands there, he wiggles his toes, makes a snorting sound, and that's it for him. So, you know, you got all these bounty hunters, and you look at IG-88, and you're like, wow, you know, here's a giant can opener. Let's see this guy in action. And you never see anything at all. So here we are, Favreau goes, hey, I need to have, you know, a help or an aid of some type or another for the Mandalorian. You know, he could have gone out and invented a whole other character like they've been doing in the movies, just one more person to keep up with. But instead, he went and exploited one of those what ifs that we had when we were kids. You know, let's put this. It doesn't have to be IG-88. We'll make an IG-11. And I'm telling you, to me, that was one of the most entertaining parts of the whole series, is watching that thing go off. So,
Yeah,
he's done a fantastic job of just taking all of the Palpatine, Sith, Jedi hoopla out of it and has just turned it, you know, on its ear and made it kind of a, there's a lot of dirty business in the world, and it can't be a whole lot different in the Star Wars universe. You know, there's got to be dirty dealings going on. And yeah, I thought they did excellent on that thing. And it's just because they didn't try to reinvent it, I guess.
And I too tried to get away from a lot of the hoopla. I don't want to give away a lot of spoilers, but I'm going to give away a few right now. I'm going to be a little generous. The movie starts off between episode 2 and 3, and it's before, Order 66. And Othar and Petra are Jedi. She's his Padawan. He's been training her. She's ready for the trials. She goes through the trials, but they fall in love, and they break the code. And they get summarily ejected from the Jedi Order. They're kicked out in the middle of a war. And he doesn't feel that that's right. He feels that that's unfair. We're in the middle of a war. We need every Jedi we can get. They kick him out. He drops his lightsaber on the ground and walks away. He's done. And you get to see what happens to a Jedi when he's no longer a Jedi. You know, they avoid Order 66 because they were kicked out, so it spared their lives. But they go live on a pirate planet, and they're just – and she actually makes a funny thing. She goes, what are we supposed to do now? We'll be the only Force user farmers in the galaxy. Look, honey, look at what this Grabba fruit yielded from the Force. You know, and he's like, no, we'll still be in the loop, but we're no longer Jedi. We're just going to do other things. And she's like what? And he's like, we'll raise a family. And she's like, really? You know, so you find out what happens to Jedis when they can no longer be Jedis. And he refuses to train his daughter, but she ends up training him behind his back, which causes problems. And she's not ready to train anyone. And he refuses to train her and allow her to be trained. He will not have her trained in the Jedi ways, but she trains her anyway. And that's what causes their downfall. And I don't want to give that away, but, you know, it gets
enough's
very interesting
enough.
After that.
Enough's enough.
Still sounds good to me.
Yeah, it's a stunning moment at the end. I can't give that away. I can't give that away. But there's a nice twist at the end where you're just it's a holy crap moment. You're like, oh my god, this is awesome, you know. And I like the twist at the end. And I have cameos. I've gotten actors that can play other roles. I've got a great voice actor named Anthony Sevens who can do every voice in Star Wars perfectly. He's going to do our Yoda voice because our characters talk to Yoda on a comlink, you know, on a hologram, and we're going to animatronic do that Yoda. And, we've got Obi-Wan Kenobi, Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan Kenobi, because he does a perfect Ewan McGregor, and we found a guy with a beard that looks just like Ewan McGregor. So we're going to do a hologram of him. We're going to have the Emperor and Palpatine, you know, cameos with them in it, and, you know, stuff like that. So we're even going to have the crew of the Ghost. So it's going to be
cool.
Really cool. Yeah, we're bringing Rebels into real life. You know, you're going to see Ezra. You know, you're going to see we got a child actor who's going to play Ezra, and you're going to see him in a cameo. It's just it's a very short clip, very short scene, but where he's handing the holocrons off to my character from the Jedi Temple that was destroyed. So it's going to be a really cool thing to actually see these cartoon characters in real life. So it's a very, very in-depth story. Yeah, it's got a lot of depth to the story. I try to put as much depth into it as I can because I want it to be a very rich story. And there could be spinoffs with many different characters. We got an actress named Jessica Lamb who's fantastic. She's playing a character named Callan Hentar who uses the double-bladed lightsaber, as you'll see in the trailer. And there's a whole backstory to her, and she sat down. She's a fantastic actress because she wants to know the character so that she could play it effectively because she's a method actress. She's like, tell me Callan's story. So I told her the whole backstory of Callan, and I was basically making it up as I went along, but it ended up being so good that I'm like, yeah, I'm going to use that. We may actually do a spinoff for Callan just because what she brings that character to life, she's so incredible. She's such a great actress, and I love her to death, and she can really portray that character the way I envisioned it in my head. When I see that character, I see Jessica now, and I may actually do a spinoff film for that because she's just so good at it, and everybody's going to love her character. She's so funny. She's so snarky and sarcastic, and, you know, there's this one scene, I'll kind of give this away. It's in a pirate camp, and she's fighting these pirates, and they all chase her into an alleyway, very similar to Han Solo when he was chased by the stormtroopers, you know? And she gets chased into an alleyway between two tents, and you see the green glow of her double-bladed lightsaber, and you hear brr, 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 you hear screams, and then you see a severed leg fly out into the courtyard, and then she turns off her lightsaber. Everything goes quiet. She turns off her lightsaber. She walks out into the alleyway, looks down at the leg, and she goes, huh, that was fun.
Yeah. You were talking about making the character interaction, the conversation, the depth, the richness, and you had mentioned earlier people are going for too many effects and stuff like that. Something that comes into my mind that is Alfred Hitchcock. I can't remember the name of the darn movie, but it was one of his murder mystery things. And it was filmed almost entirely in one room.
Yep.
Rope. It was called Rope.
You know, they used part of the foyer, and at the tail end they used some of the outside. But it was almost complete. Yet, you know, we're talking Hitchcock. He didn't do a lot of schlock.
No,
that was with Jimmy Stewart, and I can't remember. But it's a great film. It will scare you. It's good.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of my favorites.
I know I can't think of the title either, but I think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, the dude, his wife, the whole nine, it was just, yeah, you know what, it just, the, there is parts of the art that I think are sorely lost.
Amen, brother. Yes.
Because if you write the correct yarn, and you're talking about the people buying in, man, you got something.
Well, I hope that's what we've accomplished, because that's what we're trying to pull off, is we want people to fall in love with every character in the film, not just Mara. You know, I want people to be begging us, going, we want to see more of Callan. We want to see more of Zock Santorin. You know, what's up with them? And what's up with the pirates? And can we see more of the pirates? And, because I've got a pirate king. He's Black Sun. They're the Black Sun pirates. And I incorporated the Black Sun into this. And, you know, his name is... Now I'm total brain fart. Forgetting my own character's name. But he's a great character. He's the pirate king. And he's kind of evil, but he's lovable at the same time. He's got a little Twi'lek girlfriend, you know, and she's really cool, too.
And just for the record, as far as that cerebral embolism goes, get older,
yeah.
It gets worse.
Oh, yeah.
Man, it's far more often. I mean, and let me tell you, the gassets don't help.
No, it
doesn't.
Oh,
Lord.
All right, Stephen, I got a quick question for you. When is this going to be finished, and when do we get to come to the premiere?
Oh, the premiere is actually going to be at a theater in Eastern North Carolina. We're working with a theater here. It's called The Turnage in Washington. I've been talking to them, and hopefully they'll let us premiere it there. We're going to do the whole red carpet thing and everything.
And
as far
Little
as
Washington?
When, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great.
As far as when, we're hoping to get it done this year and get it out by the beginning of next year. We've been talking about this and working on this thing for 5 years, and the only thing that's been holding us up is money. You know, like I told you earlier, if somebody were to raise, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, and we could show where it goes, because, I mean, feeding the cast and crew, putting them up in hotels, and all of these things cost money, and, you know, it's the props and the sets and the costumes and everything that we need to do, and, you know, people just... it's very hard for them to take off work. So the only time we can shoot this on Sundays, because I can't afford to pay them for lost time that they take off of work. But like I said, if we could raise some money, I could get this thing done in 3 months. But it's going to take a long time because we have to shoot it only on weekends. And we try to get as much done as we can. And then we're weather dependent because a lot of our scenes are exterior. You know, we get all – it's funny because my cast and crew, they tell me all the time, you know, why don't we set up a shooting schedule for the next 8 weeks? And I can't do that because I don't know until Wednesday or Thursday what the weather is going to be like for the weekend. So it's very hard to say we're going to be shooting, you know, this weekend, and this weekend, because I don't know from week to week whether or not we're going to be able to. Now, this Sunday, we're going to have great weather, and I'm trying to pull my cast and crew together and say, guys, let's get something shot this weekend. But it's hard to get them last minute, you know, to drop their plans. So it's been very slow going.
The thing that I laughed about was predicting weather in eastern North Carolina. I lived outside the Camp Lejeune area for, you know, a decade and a half. And just saying, weather forecast.
Well, we're supposed to get snow tomorrow. We're going to have a snow day tomorrow. We're supposed to get 3 inches of snow.
Where?
In eastern North Carolina, in Greenville. We're supposed to get 3 inches of snow. And I've got a great scene for Deep End of the Pool, my romantic comedy that takes place on Christmas Day. And I would love to shoot that scene with him, with the main character in Camilla on the front porch. The problem is I haven't cast anybody to play that role yet. So I get a snow day and I don't have the actress. I need a hot girl.
You know what? If you get the right background, maybe you can use it for later. Just saying.
Yeah, I plan on. I'm going to take advantage of it. I'm going to shoot. I'm going to pull out the gear, and I'm going to shoot the snow. I'm going to shoot the scenes. And I actually talked today to Anthony Johnson about possibly using that background and then masking in the actors. And it's like if I set the camera up on a tripod and shoot from a certain angle and make sure I mark that angle and make sure that we know where we shot it from, that we can actually do the scene with no snow in the background, and then he can do his magic and actually put the snow scene that I shot already in. It's complicated, but it can be done. Even if we have to shoot it on a green screen, we will. We'll make
that,
it happen. I'm not going to waste that snow.
Listen, that's the old spirit. You just got to get it done, right?
Yep. Oh yeah,
you know, it's like,
I'm going to shoot that.
It's like I just got a quick story about getting it done. You know, I'm finishing up the new Lizard Man book. I've got to have it finished by a week from Friday, and I've been hammering on them for weeks and weeks and weeks. I just got the Lee County Observer to let me reprint all those original stories from 1988 that were in the newspaper about Lizard Man.
Oh,
and
wow.
If I hadn't dug in and just kept at it and kept at it, wouldn't have had it. And that's what's going to make this book authoritative. You know, and Dave, you know,
right.
You know this about being an author. You just got to overcome something. You just can't give up. And that's what I like here, Stephen. That's what I like about listening to you talk. You're not a giver upper, are you?
I'm sorry.
Did you hear me?
We faded out for a second. What did I call it? I missed that last part.
I said, you're just not a giver upper, are you?
No, not at all. No, not at all. Not at all. I'm a do or die guy. I've always been a do or die
You just wouldn't let go. But that's great. And that's what it takes to be successful. That's all it takes to be successful. But you know what? And I'm going to say this, and I'll shut up, because I talk too much.
No,
but
I'm
the worst. But the whole point is, if you give up, you lost. If you give up on making this movie, you've got all the time and all the great work and all the script and all the everything. You've got it all, and you got nothing.
Exactly.
And
no, I refuse to give up.
If you finish it, you got everything. And that's what
exactly.
People don't understand. That's what people don't understand. And Todd and Dave, you guys know that's just the way life really is.
Now, well, that works in film, and it works in what we're doing, and it works as far as, you know, keep your nose to the grindstone, don't give up. stay with it no matter what. That works in things like this, but I also do, like I said, I do the show, The Relationship Life, and I have learned through experience that when it comes to women, us guys, if we have that do or die, don't give up attitude, we get friend zoned.
Well, you know, but I think you know what I mean in terms of a project. In terms
I do,
of a project,
but we've all had that woman that we came on a little too strong, and yeah, she was like, "Nah, not happening."
Well, you
gotta know what you gotta know when to quit.
Yeah, and you can say sorry and let's be friends, and that's still a victory. If that's the victory that you're allowed to have is still a victory. Finishing a film is a victory. The relationship thing, if you end up being friends, or at least they're not going to kill you, you know, I mean, that may be the best. That may be the best you can do. But yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. I was being facetious, but yeah.
Yeah, and you scared me there about the weather.
I got
a big lizard man thing coming up tomorrow. I got to get to the mountains of Georgia, so I can't miss it. Anyway, great. Okay, I'll be scared.
It's only snowing in a swath of eastern North Carolina, from like I-95 eastward. So that's the only place that they're going to get snow. So we're, like I said, I'm going to shoot that Six Ways from Tuesday from every possible angle I can think of, and just get raw footage as much as possible. And then we'll try to fix it and play with it in post.
I'm east of Interstate 95. Come on. That's frightening.
Is this frightening? I got all my milk and bread, though, so I'm good.
Good.
All right. You know, pour that milk on the bread. You're in business.
Yeah, as long as you got milk and bread. I don't know what that is. I've tried to make a milk sandwich, but it just ends up nasty. But you know, I guess that's what you need.
What do you mean? All you have to do... You can have French toast. Just make sure you got butter and syrup.
And eggs, exactly. I've got chicken, so I've got eggs.
Get the clock out of here.
I got a funny story. I got a really funny story about raising chickens. One of my very good friends is up in Lakemont, Georgia, and I noticed him calling all the chickens by the same name, Alan. I said, why that? He said, well, you don't want to have to have one of them for supper and say, well, this is Billy Bob.
Yeah, exactly. I've got Clucky and Karen. I've got two of them. I got Clucky and Karen. Karen's kind of dumb. She's really dumb. She's just a dumb chicken. She pecks at everything. And like, I'll put the food down and she'll go off and peck somewhere else. And I'm like, the food's over here, Karen. Yeah. Karen's not too bright.
Sounds like me.
That's not a blonde chicken, is it?
No, they're Rhode Island Reds, but she just goes, like, she'll sit in her roost and she'll start pecking at the ground, you know, at the hay, and I'm like, you can't eat that, Karen. You got to come down here. Here's where the food is. And she'll look at me, you know, and I'm like, yeah, okay, just come here. Karen's just not too bright. I think she was dropped as an egg.
I like it.
She dropped as an egg. Okay.
Yeah, I think I dated her at one point.
Or maybe she got post-traumatic stress syndrome from Lizard Man, so who knows. All right.
Could be.
All right. We'll keep on going. Tell us some more about your film. Because I'm excited to listen to this and to get to talk about it.
It's hard because I don't want to spoil it. There's so much to tell.
Well,
but I don't want to spoil it.
You know what? Don't spoil it. You know, you got to just chum the water a wee bit and let it happen. No, I'm with you because, I think you've given quite a bit tonight. I'm really – hearing this stuff, I'm digging it, and I'm hoping the listeners are too. And I'm hoping, you know, they'll sit there and have some of that water cooler talk and be like, dude, I heard some of this tonight. But something I want to do real quick is Dr. John had guy Kevin Holland tried to reach out on the site tonight. He wasn't able to get through any of the connections to be able to listen to the show live. but I wanted to mention them because, you know, brand new listener, want to try to give, you know, try to give them some love live.
Oh, I know him, and I sent him a link, a different link, and I didn't hear back from him, so he must be listening. Hey, Kevin, hope you're doing well. I got to talk to him tonight after the show anyway, so it's all good. He's a great guy. Great family, and he's going to be our guest next week because he was on The Walking Dead. Did you know that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm not.
So Kevin Holland's our guest next week, and so yeah, it's gonna be great. So you'll get to meet him in person. Good guy.
Fantastic. There is one scene I can talk about actually that's rather interesting. I think you guys will find this interesting. I love to have Easter eggs in my film. I love to put Easter eggs in my stuff, the stuff that people that are really the diehard fans would get. And a lot of people probably won't get this, so I'm going to clarify it so that people that are listening can understand it. There's a scene in the trailer, it's actually in the trailer, where you see my character being tortured. You know, they hold this device that he says, I think his line is, let's see where your loyalties really lie, Jedi. And that's the Pirate King I was telling you about. And he holds this device that glows red to his chest, and it's kind of like a taser type of deal. Well, that he explains it in the film that, you know, Othar thinks it's a lightsaber, and he goes, "You just got to kill me with a lightsaber." And he's like, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, there's more to it than that. But he says, "No, this is no lightsaber." He goes, "I might actually sell this to the Empire. It's a device to extract information." And it directly harkens to, it's the same device, only it's a handheld version of the same thing that tortured Han Solo on Bespin when he was being lowered onto that device. And he was like, hot, hot, hot. And then you hear him screaming. It's the same exact device, only it's a handheld version. And he says, "I can actually install this into an entire rack and sell it to the Empire. And maybe one day I will." So it's like, that's the guy that invented that torture rack. You actually see the guy that invented that. And he's sadistic as hell. And the funny thing is his little Twi'lek companion, Sten, who his little Twi'lek girlfriend, she's sadistic. And she says, "Let me do it, boss." And she grabs the device and she holds it to him. And she's like, "Tell me where the holocrons are." And he goes, "I won't tell you anything." And then she goes a little lower. She shocks him on his chest. And then she goes to his stomach. And then, you know, and then she goes a little. And then she holds it down lower off camera. And she goes, "You will tell me everything I need to know." And he's like, "Okay, okay, okay. I'll tell you everything you need to know." She was going to shock him, you know.
Between his legs.
He went a little too low, yeah. She went a little too low. So it's a funny scene that he's like, "Okay, whoa, 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 let's talk about this."
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's so much room to run, you know, with Star, and that was. Yeah, the good news was that Disney picked them up because I think to a certain extent George Lucas probably, you know, he said he wanted to hand it off to people that were going to do it right after he moved on from this earth, and I get that. Of course, I don't know if he quite accomplished that because what's her name turned right around and put a knife in his back, but.
Well, I want to believe that I want to believe that he had some input in the last three, that they at least consulted him. You know, I want to believe that they at least consulted him on it, you know.
And, you know, then I read the
question. When you say last three, what do you mean by the last three?
7, 8, 9.
Okay, because I don't know, one of those ones, what was it, the ultimate prequel, or the one in between 1 and 3, and 4 through yeah. 6 came out somewhere in that series, and I just don't remember the order.
Yeah, well, no, I'm talking about Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, and Rise of Skywalker. they did a great job with it. The only thing that I really have a beef with, and I love the storyline. I love where they went with it. I love that Luke was disgusted with all of it, and I love where they went with that. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is we never got to see the three together. We never got to see Luke, Leia, and Han in the same room at the same time. We never got to see Luke light a lightsaber and just go to town on somebody. You know, I was really expecting to see this epic lightsaber battle between him and somebody, and we never got to see that. You know, I was fully expecting, you know, that Snoke was going to be this uber awesome character, and he ended up being nobody. You know, the whole thing with Rey, everybody thought she was a Skywalker. They built it up to where she was a Skywalker, and she's the daughter of Palpatine. I mean, a granddaughter of Palpatine. I was just like, wow, really?
You know, I'm just still waiting for Han Solo to come back.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I understand why, as a filmmaker, I understand why they did what they did. If they'd have made Rey Luke's daughter, like everybody thought she was, everybody swore up and down that was Luke's daughter. You remember that? Everybody believed that. If they'd have come out and said that that was Luke's daughter, like if it in the second film in The Last Jedi, when he was standing there and she handed him the lightsaber and he's like, who are you? And she goes, I don't know. And he goes, I know exactly who you are. And because they kind of set it up in Force Awakens, where there's a scene in the cantina when Maz Kanata is talking to Han Solo and Finn goes off to get a ride home, ride to the other end of the galaxy. And Rey gets up and walks away and goes to try to find Finn. And Maz looks at Han and she says, who's the girl? And then you never get to hear what he says. He never explains it. Now, obviously, he was explaining that she was a Palpatine. But everybody thought that he was saying that's Luke's kid, you know. As a filmmaker, I understand why they went the direction they did, because if they'd have done that, if he'd have been standing on that island and he'd have said, you know, you're my daughter, that would have been the very definition of predictable. You know, and everybody would have rolled their eyes and went, oh, I saw that coming. So at least they kept it where you didn't see that coming. There was nobody predicted she was a Palpatine. That was way out of left field.
I'm still
there. A little misdirection is good.
If Palpatine has a grandkid, that means Palpatine has a kid, which means if you can't get laid this week, there is hope still, because if old Palps can get some leg, anybody can get some leg.
It helps be the Emperor of the Galaxy too. I mean, I don't care what you look like. If you're the Emperor of the Galaxy, yeah, you're going to get something.
Yeah, I would imagine there's a little bit of stroke with that, you know, but it's,
I mean,
funny. It makes me think about your wedding that you were filming. She was marrying him for the money. No matter what he looked like, he had money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a good-looking guy, but I'm no Dave Atwell. I'm a good-looking guy, but I'm no Dave Atwell. I mean,
I cannot roll my eyes at that. I never saw that one coming.
That's what she said.
You know, the only thing that's stopping me from saying you poor bastard on the air is I'm not allowed to say you poor bastard on the air.
Anyway, that's all right. I'm the executive producer. You're okay with me. You know, I'm fairly liberal when it comes to that. I'll just say this. The one moment in film that really, because I had never read the book, The Lord of the Rings, and when all of a sudden Gandalf returned, that was the most awesome 2 sec. And Carrie Fisher and Han Solo, you know, showing back up a couple years ago, those were like the greatest moments nobody expected, and they were incredible. They were just incredible. Yeah. And that's why
Say you really had never read the books?
No, I'd never seen it. I mean, I'd never read the books. Todd, it was all I could do to see the movies. Gee, I mean, I have no time. I'm trying to write Lizard Man and Bigfoot books. How do I have time to go read Tolkien?
Oh, if I want a really good nap, I just put on Lord of the Rings. Yeah, I always fall asleep in the middle of that thing. I can't stay awake through that. It's a great movie, don't get me wrong, but I always drift off because there's so much walking. You know, if they'd have found the eagles in the beginning of the film, it would have been a 3-minute film.
It would have helped out a lot. That whole part with the Shire at the beginning, and though I understand it's part of story building, that whole part, I'm here to tell you, and God bless DVDs where you can actually just, fast forward to a certain part of the movie so that way you're up and over all that garbage.
And, how dare you, Dave? How dare you fast forward through anything on Lord of the Rings? That's heresy.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, dude, Dave, if you suffered through that, you would have, the whole Tom Bombadil stuff would have driven you bonkers.
Could you imagine, you know, he's on the lava and they send the eagles to pick him up. I mean, can you imagine the conversation between him, you know, and the wizard going, you had these eagles the whole time, dude. Why did you make us walk 50 million miles?
No. Actually, there's a thing about where Gandalf is getting taken out by the Balrog, where he said something about fly, you fools, fly. And that's where it was something about where they should have just taken the eagles at that point, and they would have obviated a shit ton of the story and been done.
Yeah, exactly.
Could have taken the eagle, dropped it over, flown over the mountain there at Mordor, and just boink, and been done.
Exactly. It would have been done. Yeah. A little bit of piece of cake.
But you can't do that. You can't do that. No, you can't.
It would have been a 10-minute film.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
that's all right.
My dad, he says all the time, he says, if I ever win Publisher's Clearinghouse, he said, when they come up to the front door and beat on it, he said, I'm going to open the door up, and I'm not going to get excited. He says, I'm going to kick them right in the ass and ask them why it took them 73 years to get out here.
I'll tell you, I am so excited. I am.
You know what?
So
knowing your dad, I thought he would have said, "Get off my lawn."
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about the new Avatar. I can't wait. I was a big Avatar fan, and I've been waiting a long time for that.
Well, all right.
I don't know if that's coming out this year or next year.
Well, I'm going to shock the world. Oh, I can tell you, when I'm done with Lizard Man, my next book is the next installment of Lord of the Rings. I want to do something nobody would have ever guessed. So you just watch, boys and girls. It's going to be a shocker. It's going to be fun. But anyway,
awesome. But I can't wait.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. We've had a great time talking to you. We're getting to closing down time here. Our 90 minutes is about up, and I want to just give everyone 1 minute, Dave, 1 minute to say your goodbyes and say your plugs, and then we can quietly walk away as the British lady doesn't start yelling at us first. So this is what we do. We do plugs. Papa Stroh taught us this. So I'm going to go in the following order. I'm going to go Todd. I'm going to go you, and I'm going to go Dave, and then I'm going to go me, and we'll all say goodnight, sleep tight, Aviter Zane, to you, and act like we're in the Sound of Music, okay?
Okay.
Todd, what you got to say?
All right, doing a good combination of plug for work. Glad you all mentioned cancer thing, so it's been ugly this week hearing that stuff, so thoughts, prayers, good karma. But, so stuff I deal with my boss and stuff my boss deals with me. All the muckety mucks are involved in an email. I'm CC'd on it. The boss says, hey, just send me the reply to the answer to all these people, and we'll be good. I went back to his office. I said, no, I just sent it to you. You do realize everybody that's on that list, right? I go, you know, this way you can fix some of my dumb acidness. And he goes, oh, no, I wanted them to introduce you to them. I go, were you mad at them? He goes, no, I wanted them to know what I deal with. I go, oh, so you're looking for sympathy first thing in the morning. True story.
Lord have mercy.
True story.
Whatever. Whatever. Okay. Anyway, that's a good plug for your boss. We know you love him, and he does sign your timesheet, so you got to be a little careful. Be nice to him.
Oh,
right,
no, dude, he's awesome. He's awesome. The fact that you can have that banner with your boss's money.
That's right, and still come back the next day. That's great. All right, Stephen, what you got to plug?
I've got to plug, first off, you know, we can bring an end to childhood cancer. We can help the kids. So please, please go to stjude.org, stjude.org, and give anything you can to that cause, because that is an amazing cause. And, you know, together we can finally put an end to childhood cancer and end the suffering of these kids. If you want to help me in my film, you can go to patreon.com/MSMF and please sign up for that. I can use all the help I can get making these movies. You can find my trailers and stuff on just Google, or go to YouTube and look up Motion Sound and Magic Films. Also go to YouTube and look up The Relationship Life with Stephen Bastian. And, you know, I have some amazing videos on there. I've got 30 that I'm putting up now, and I'm going to do one every day. And I'm going to just keep doing them. And any topics people want to discuss, I'll be glad to discuss them and help many people as I can with that. And then look for Star Wars Mara, hopefully sometime next year. That's about all I got.
We'll bring Todd down from Indianapolis, and I think that would be great.
Oh, I
Dave Atwell. Dave Atwell, curmudgeon at large, what have you got to say?
Well, without saying, you know, the health thing's been a little rough these last couple of days out of nowhere, but since I got on the air here, my Buck 40 English Mastiff Misty has been sitting next to me here on the couch. And she patiently let me pet her for the entire show. And now my little chocolate lab is sitting here at my feet. And I'm telling you, if you ever feel bad, if you're having a bad day, if you're just not feeling up to it, sit down with your dogs. It's amazing how they make you feel better. Any time spent with your dog is never time wasted, you know. And God bless these animals. They know exactly when you're not feeling yourself, and they come right to your rescue. So, yeah, give your dog a hug for me. If you ain't got a dog, go out and get one and hug it. So, amen to that.
That's great. Thank you, Dave. And my plug will be, we'll see you tomorrow night at ScaryCast at 10:30 p.m. right after WCW Retro on VOC Nation. I'll hopefully be there and reading my Lizard Man book by Lyle Blackburn, so I can get some things finished up. Got to get that book done, and we'll have a big party right here online when we do. So we will have you back, Stephen.
Yes, please. I would love to. Anytime.
We'll stay up with you, and I want to say goodnight to some of the best friends I've got in the world. And we love you, Liz. We know you'll be back as soon as you can. And next week we will have Kevin Holliday from The Walking Dead from way down there in Alabama. Good guy. So thanks a lot, everybody. Enjoyed it. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Pop Culture. Bye.
Good dogs, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Good night,
thanks for
everybody.
Being here tonight. You were awesome, dude.
Thank
Bye.
You,
totally, man. No blood.